So we are holding Chof Tes Amud Bey, the Mishnah at the end of the Amud, C lines from the bottom. Mishnah says, Amachaba Samer, suppose a person on Shabbos puts out the candle, puts out the lamp, because he's afraid of Goyim. What would the Goyim have a problem with him having a light? So Rashi gives the example we talked about before. The Persians had a law. They had a law that on certain holidays of theirs they would only allow that fires or candles are burning in their temples of Avodah Zarah. One of the things they worshipped was fire. So on certain chagas of theirs they had such a law. So suppose then you lit Shabbos candles and then let's say you realize that the Persian police are going door to door and checking. So now you're going to put out the candle because of that, or if they list him, or because of thieves. Because, for example, you know, they're going to see there's a light there, and then, like, you know, like we have the story of Rabbi Akiva and Brachos over there, that if they see the candle, they're going to go and attack him. Mipnei ruach ra, or because of an evil spirit, Rashi says, that, let's say you have a person, unfortunately, suffering from depression or something like that, so they feel better when there's no light in the room. Or mipnei hachole sheyishan, or because of a sick person who needs to be able to sleep. So in all of those, and we'll see in the Gemara what kind of sick person are we talking about. Are we talking about a sick person whose life is in danger or not? In all those cases, potter. In all those cases, he puts out the lamp, then he's potter. We'll see in the Gemara. We'll see in the Gemara why, in the case of a sick person, if it's a dangerously sick person, why is he only potter? So we'll get to that. What potter usually implies, as we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, that he's also to do it, but having done it, he's not chayav chatos or skila or what have you. But why would that be? We'll see in the Gemara in a minute. On the other hand, we're in the middle of the Mishnah, so that's on the days at the bottom. Suppose that the person instead on Shabbos puts out the light because he wants to. Because he wants to save the lamp. So he sees, for example, that there's noise from somebody's phone over there. If I can put it on mute, thanks. So chosal on there. Suppose that the person puts out the lamp on Shabbos. Because, let's say, he sees that the lamp itself, the clay or whatever it is, container that contains the oil and the wick, is getting ruined by the heat of the flame. So therefore he puts out the candle because of that. Or kachos ala shemen, or because he wants to save the oil, kachos ala psila, or because he wants to save the wick and be able to use it another time. In all those cases, he puts it out on Shabbos. For any of those reasons, chayev, then he's chayev chatos. We're talking about, because he did it for shogeg, let's say, but he's chayav chatos for it, because after all, he did a malacha, and unlike in the previous cases where he did it in order to save a person's life, or whatever, we'll see the exact details in the Gemara, but over here, he did it in order to save the lamp, or what have you, therefore he's chayav. The expression kichos, by the way, is a little bit interesting. What is the kuf doing over there? So there's a few possibilities. One of them means it's like in Hebrew, when, like ka'asher, so it means if he's having, as Rashi later on explains, it means ki chos, if he's doing it because he's chos, because he wants to save the ner, etc. There's an interesting verse, which I think I've seen sourced to the Vilna Gaon, that the reason the Mishnah uses that expression is because the kuf can also be what's called kuf adimya, the kuf of like, the kuf of something is like something else. So he thinks that he's going to save money by this, by putting out the candle, but he doesn't realize that actually all of a person's expenses and everything, all of a person's income and expenses are predetermined for the year on Rosh Hashanah by Hashem, with the exception, among other things, of what he spends on Shabbos. So he thinks he's going to save money by putting out the lamp, and therefore that the clay container won't break, or the oil will have more oil for another time. He doesn't. He's Kechoso, it's like he's saving, because he doesn't realize he's not actually saving anything by it, because Hashem has already predetermined what he's going to make and what he's going to spend that year. Anyway, Rabbi Yossi Pocha Bekulin. Rabbi Yossi says, though, that no, with all of those cases, he's actually potter for putting out the lamp, not to say he or potter has its usual meaning. He's not allowed to, but if he does, he's not chayav chatos, chutz min hatefilah. With the exception of if he puts out the candle because he wants to save the wick. Mishu oisa pecham, because with doing that, he's making chawful. Meaning, what once, as we learned yesterday or 2 days ago, once you light a wick on fire the first time, then afterwards it becomes easier to light it in the future. So therefore, in other words, you by putting it out now, you're making charcoal, you're making something which is now easier to light the next time, and that is the purpose for which they put out fires in the Mishkan in the first place. And one of the melachos we know is mechaba, is putting out a flame on Shabbos. One of the 39 melachos, and the reason for it, we're going to learn later on, is because in the Mishkan, what they would do is part of the process of melting down the various metals that they needed for the Mishkan was that they would burn wood to make charcoal, and then they would have the charcoal, which then you could use. Charcoal makes a much hotter fire than wood, so that way it would be hot enough for them to be able to melt the metal and be able to work it for the Mishkan. So the purpose of putting out a fire in the Mishkan was in order to create charcoal. So over here, he's doing exactly the same thing. He's putting out the lamp in order to have the wick is now charcoal and now it'll light easier the next time. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi says that he'd be chayav because he did the melacha for the same purpose as in the Mishkan and for a constructive purpose, as opposed to the other cases where he's doing it in order to save the lamp or in order to save the oil. Then Rabbi Yossi says that's melacha shein tzricha legufa. Now, we learned briefly in the first parak. We're going to learn about it more extensively later on in the sechta that you have a machloikas Rabbi. It's one of the machloikas in the Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon regarding Hilchot Shabbos is on this question of malacha she'enet tzricha legufa. When you're doing malacha which is not needed for its own purpose, and what that means. Rashi says it means where you're doing the malacha, but you're in a situation where you would rather not have done it. Like over here in this case, you would rather that the lamp hadn't been burning in the first place in order not to have the oil get used up. So now you're putting it out in order to save the oil. So that would be it's a malacha, but you're not doing it because you wanted the malacha. And as a result, you're doing it basically because you're forced into it. Other Rishonim learn a little bit differently that you're doing that malacha shein tzricha legufa is where you're doing it in order to avoid some kind of harm or something. Like over here, you're doing it in order to avoid using up the oil, again, as opposed to in the Mishkan where they did it for a specific purpose, for a specific constructive purpose, namely in order to have charcoal. Tosfos has a whole different explanation of malacha shein tzricha legufa that it means that malacha shein tzricha legufa, according to Tosfos, is when you're doing it not for the same purpose as in the Mishkan. Again, in the Mishkan, they put out flames in order to create charcoal. Here, you're doing it not in order to create charcoal. You're doing it for a different purpose, in order to save the oil or whatever. So in all such cases, Reb Shimon holds that you're not chayav for it. So he would hold also to do it, fine, but you're not chayav for it. But and Reb Yossi, therefore, in our Mishnah, is following Reb Shimon's shita. And meanwhile, as we're going to see in the Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda would say that you chayev anyway, because even though it was ain't a tzricha legufa, nevertheless the same malacha was still done. You still put out a flame, and therefore you're still equally chayev, even though it wasn't for a constructive purpose, and even though you didn't want to have to be in that situation, etc. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. The first part of the Mishnah, Mishkatani Sefer Chayev. Now, in the end of the Mishnah, again, when we talk about this part about where he's putting out the flame in order to save the lamp or the oil or what have you, and we say in all three cases the Tanakhama says he's Chayev, Shmami Rav Yehuda. Evidently, therefore, that must mean that the Mishnah, therefore, our Mishnah goes according to Rav Yehuda, that even though it's Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa. Again, even though he's doing it for a purpose where he didn't really want to be in that situation in the first place, or where he's not doing it for the same purpose as the Mishkan or whatever, nevertheless, he's still chayav. But then Reisha, the Maya Sitna, then we have to ask in that case, then in the Reisha, where we have the case where, for example, you're putting out the flame because you're afraid of Goyim or for the sake of a sick person, etc. So we said that you're potter. So what's the situation? If we're talking about a person, a sick person whose life is in danger, or in the other cases similarly, in the case of the Goyim, let's say, for example, the person's life would actually be in danger, the Goyim might kill him for violating the law or whatever, then mutter me violate. Then the expression should be potter. The expression should be mutter. He's completely mutter to do it because it's sakana nefashis. If we're talking about a sick person whose life is not in danger, then what do you mean? According to the Yehuda, you're not allowed to break, in general, actually, according to everybody, you're not allowed to break Yisurim Daraisa for the sake of a sick person whose life is not in danger. So then, Chayev Chafetz Nibarilei. So then we should have to say Chayev Chafetz. And Mela, if the Mishnah was according to Rav Shimon, fine, we can understand, because Rav Shimon in general says that Malacha Shein Etzricha L'Gufa is Potter. So that was fine. In the Reisha, you're putting it out for the sake of the sick person, that's Malacha Shein Etzricha L'Gufa. So even though the sick person is not dangerously ill, and therefore you don't have a right to break Shabbos with Daraisas for him, but nevertheless you did it fine, it was Malacha Shein Etzricha L'Gufa, we're not going to make you Chayev Chafetz. But if the Mishnah goes according to Rav Yehuda, and the end of the Mishnah seems to be that way, then how can we say in the Reisha that he's potter? The answer is we are talking about a sick person whose life is in danger, or again, the other cases where there is actually danger to life involved, or the dinhu delisni mutter. Really then, by rights, the Mishnah should have used the word mutter, which implies it's completely mutter to do it in this case because of the situation. So why does he use the word potter? But I do the boy who makes me safer chayev, because in the safer it has to use the word chayev, and there, according to the Yehuda, it really does mean it really is chayev, a chatas. Therefore, tanan ami reisha potter. Therefore, in the reisha, it uses the word potter, because potter is the opposite of chayev. So you're right. This is one of those cases where even though we use the word potter, nevertheless, really what it means is butter. And we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, actually, that there are three places in the Sechta Shabbos where we said that we said the way it uses the word potter, and really it means mutter. Actually, we listed three of them. We didn't list this one because we said that Shmuel holds like Rav Shimon, but we said our Mishnah is according to Rav Yehuda. But you have cases in our Masechta, you have rare cases where the word potter is used to mean mutter, and this is one of them. Okay. Behold the Tani Rav Oshia. Now, what about this that Rav Oshia teaches in a Braisa? Im b'shvil achola sheyishan lo yichada. If you're doing it for the sake of a sick person in order for him to be able to sleep, you shouldn't lachatchila put it out. The im kiba potter aval also. But if you did put out the light, then it's potter, but it was also to do. So what would that? What's that situation? So that would be hashi b'chola she'en by sakana. That would be referring to where the sick person is not in danger. His life is not in danger. So he's sick. He's uncomfortable, but he's not going to. His life is not in danger. But Rav Shimon he, and therefore that would specifically be according to Rav Shimon. That would specifically be according to Rav Shimon, where again Rav Shimon says in general, malacha she'en tzricha l'gufa, you potter. So therefore he would say in this case, if a person is not sick, fine, it's a malacha shein tzricha l'gufa. You're not doing it for the same purpose as in the Mishkan. You're not doing it for any kind of constructive purpose. You're doing it in order to avoid harm. So that would be one of the examples. That would be one of the cases where Rav Shimon is saying you're not allowed to do it, but if you do it, then you're potter. There is, by the way, there is some discussion about the question, what happens, for example, if you can easily, what happens if you can just as easily move the person out of the room or put up a divider or something, so that Rambam actually learns in Pirush HaMishnayos that would say that in that case, Yutaka wouldn't be able to. The only way you would do it, the only way you'd be allowed to, again, when the person is dangerously sick, would be if there's no other way to do it. There's nothing, you don't have anything there that would be able to make a partition, for example, to block the light easily enough, or you don't, it's not possible to move the person into another room. And then you have the Ra'ah says that it is mutter either way.
But Reb Shimon would still believe that Melacha Shitzchicha Gufa is Chayev?
Of course. Otherwise you have no Melacha on Shabbos at all, yeah.
Right.
It's for the same purpose as in the Mishkan, according to Tosfos' understanding, or if it's for a purpose that a person wants it to be done, rather than the opposite. Where he's doing it not because he didn't want to be in this situation in the first place. Then yeah, of course, Rav Shimon would agree that he's allowed. That Rav Shimon would agree that he's chayav.
Right.
Subject also to the other thing we talked about yesterday, where it was malacha, where it was davar sheni miskaven. Again, you have several machlokes in Hilchos Shabbos between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, different machlokes. Okay.
And on Rabbi Yehuda's side, what makes him so convinced that she malacha she'ena tzicha legufa, he's still chayav? What's his thinking process behind that?
He still did the malacha. The Torah says not to do malachas on Shabbos, one of them being to extinguish a flame, and he extinguished a flame. We don't really care what the reason for it was, as long as he did it. But we'll talk about that in more detail later on. We'll talk about that in more detail later on in the Sechta, in the 10th Perek of Al Masechta in particular. We're going to get a little more extensively into this matter of malacha shetzricha legufa and in tzricha legufa. Okay. Now, the Gemara tells, sho'el she'ela zula ela mirab tanchum demin noi. They've asked the following question in front of Rav Tanchum from Noi. La'ela literally means above him. Rashi says it's actually an expression of respect, just like we find on the Malachim. Su'achim only mimaloi, the su'achim stand, literally mimaloi means above Hashem, but they don't actually stand above Hashem, of course. It means from a distance, so the same way over here, like they stood at a bit of a distance out of respect to ask the question. We actually had yesterday in the Gemara also, we had that certain things were done la'ela mirab Yitzchak for Rabbi Elazar, la'ela mirab Yirmiyahu Rabba. So it's the same kind of thing. They were done in front of them, but at some distance out of respect. Then Yahya points out another point also. Usually the Chacham would be sitting, and the person who's asking the question would be standing, so like he's standing above the Chacham. Anyway, they asked him the question like this. They asked Rav Tanchum Demin Noi the question like this. Ma'u l'chabos butzina denura mikame v'isha b'shamsa. Are you allowed to put out the candle flame because of a sick person on Shabbos, where, in other words, the person is dangerously sick, like we said before. So that was the question. So instead of answering directly, now obviously the situation wasn't where they need the answer right away, otherwise he would have answered right away. The situation was that he wanted to make sure, Rashi says later on Amud Beis, that you have women and Amei Oros over there, that he wants to learn with them, he wants to teach them a piece of Agadta, which will draw them in, and then explain to them the answer. This way they'll see the answer clearly. So he started out with a drasha, which is going to eventually lead into the answer to this question, in order that then they should see it clearly. The vote they say on it also, Eliezer brings that like this. You have the Gemara elsewhere talks about that if a Rav is asked such a question on Pikuach Nefesh, then it means the Rav is not doing his job. Why didn't he tell everybody in advance? Why didn't he make it clear to them already? That Pikuach Nefesh is very Chashabim. So therefore, when Rav Tanchum sees that they're asking him the question, he realizes, okay, well then in that case, obviously everybody doesn't know this, everybody locally doesn't know this halacha yet. Let me better, therefore, give a big public drasha about it in order that everybody will realize once and for all what the din is. So, pasach ba'amar. So he began with a drasha. Rashi says in general, when they were asked shailas, very often they would start out with a drasha like that before they got to the actual question. There's a sefer from one of the Uli Gaonim called Shiltis that Abachoi Gaon. It's very likely the first sefer that has a known author after the time of the Gemara. And he has in the manuscripts in the Kisviyad of it, at least of it, it's arranged like that, where you have each section of it, each section for each parasha begins with a shaila and halacha, and then it deals with drush, and eventually gets back to the halacha. Anyway. So Rav Tanchum began like this, Pasach v'omer, Ant Shloimer, you Shloimer Amelch, On Chochmosach, On Suchlosanusach, where is your Chochma, where is your understanding? Loi Dayecha Shedvarim Tedbarecha Soysun Divei David Avicha, not only is what you said in one of your Sfarim, namely in Sefer Kehelet, not only does it contradict something that your father David Amelch said in Tehillim, But also you find something that you yourself wrote in Kehelet, you wrote in Kehelet, which contradicts something else that you yourself wrote in Kehelet. What's going on over here? David HaMelech says in Tehillim that dead cannot praise Hashem. In other words, in Hallel, we say it is Loyam Mason Yahaluka. In other words, that there's an advantage to being alive over being dead. You in Kehelet say a pasuk that I praise the dead who've already died. In other words, that according to you, there's an advantage to a person who passed away. But then you yourself, later on in Kehelet, you say that a living dog is better off than a dead lion. So what is it? Is it better? Are the living better or are the dead better? So he starts out loikasha, when David says that the dead cannot praise Hashem, what he means is hachikama. This is what David means to say by that. David is saying with this, la'olam yasik adam b'toda over mitzvah kodem shiyamos. A person always needs to be occupying himself with Torah and mitzvah before he dies, as much as possible. Shekivin shemes, bottle min ha-Torah min ha-Mitzvah, because as soon as he dies, he's bottle from Torah and Mitzvah. He can no longer keep Torah and Mitzvah. He can no longer learn Torah. He can no longer keep Mitzvah. And in fact, Maharsha says, even for example, you have, let's say, we learned about it in Brachos. Even let's say you have a very mess in Tachrichim, but then you bury them with a talus. But still, the Tachrichim are allowed to be shatnez. The talus can have the talus. You have different minhagim about whether you cut off a corner or whether you fold in a corner or whatever. So even the mess is not even those things that conceivably could apply to a mess don't apply to him. So the Ein LaKadosh Baruch Hu Shvach Bo, and Hashem has no praise out of such a person once he's dead. And by the way, of course, this has very much to do with the subject that they asked him about. They're asking him whether to put out the light for the sake of a sick person who is dangerously ill. So we see already we see from the beginning of Rapanchum's answer, before he even gets further into explaining the psukim and all, that, yeah, the living have much more of an advantage over the dead because they're able to do mitzvahs. So therefore, yeah, you have to do whatever is possible to save the person's life. The Meiri, by the way, has a very interesting take on it, which he says it's not even must say, okay, so you're talking about a person lying in bed, for example, you know, so what's dangerously sick, so what kind of mitzvahs can they do right there while they're lying in bed? He says the person can do tshuva at the last moment. So therefore, that alone is worth it, makes it worth it to try and help them stay alive as long as possible. Okay. Continues the Gemara, behind the Amar Rabbi Yechanan, this fits with what Rabbi Yechanan says. What does the pasuk mean, another pasuk in Tehillim, that says, in the dead there is freedom? Means as soon as a person dies, he's free of Torah and Mitzvah. He's no longer obligated to learn Torah. He's no longer obligated to do mitzvahs. Like we said, even the mitzvahs that could conceivably apply to him after he's dead, like shatnez and tzitzis, even those don't apply anymore after he passed away. So therefore that's what Shlomo means when he says loy hamesim yahalukah, that the dead cannot praise Hashem, because how do we praise Hashem? By learning Torah and by doing mitzvahs. And like this, a dead person is not able to do that anymore. What does Shlomo mean when he says, on the other hand, I praise the dead who have died? So what advantage do the dead people have? If we just said they don't have an advantage, they can no longer learn Torah and they can no longer do mitzvahs. So like this, we see in history, Shekhotu Yisrael Bamidbar, when the Jewish people sinned in the Midbar and did the Chet Ha'egel, Amad Moshe lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'amad kama tefillos v'tachanunim lefanav, Moshe Rabbeinu stood in front of Hashem and said many tefillos and many pleas in front of Hashem to forgive the Jewish people, v'loy nana, and Hashem didn't answer him in his own zchus, even though, of course, the Moshe is the ultimate tzaddik. But then when he said, But then when he asked Hashem, remember Avraham Yitzchak and Yisrael, your servant, so when he davened in the schos of the others, miyad nana, then right away he was answered, and Avaynochem Hashem, and Hashem took it back and said, I'm not going to destroy the Jewish people. The law Yotha Omar Shloimeh of Shabbat Hamesim Shekhar Mesu. So isn't it valid that Shloimeh says that I praise the dead? Because the advantage of them is that when during their life they did Torah and Mitzvah, so now there's tchus is greater than that of the living tzaddikim, and Hashem answers our tefillos in their tchusim. The Medrash actually says on that pasuk, on that section of it, there's Chol Avraham Yitzchak Yisrael. The Medrash makes an interesting point that the Jewish people are compared to a grapevine. Geffen Mitzrayim Tafia. We have an official page, for example. A grapevine is a living organism. It's a living tree. But what do you use in order to support it? Usually a grapevine by itself, the branches would be spread all over the ground. Instead, you put it on a trellis. You set up a framework of sticks and there or something, and you train the vine to grow on that. So therefore, in effect, you have the living vine is supported by dead sticks. So therefore, the Medrash says, that's the comparison to the Jewish people, that the living Jewish people are supported by the dead others.
Yeah, but who says that what applies to Tzadikim, Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, would apply to anybody else to explain Shlomo's statements? Probably not.
First of all, maybe not, but that's not the point. The point is, Shlomo's statement could be referring, even if it refers only to the three of us, then fine, that's already. You still have those Amesu, Shekhar Amesu, and still they have an advantage over the living. As you see, they have an advantage over Moshe Rabbeinu. But Rashi says that actually it applies more generally to Tzaddikim, who occupied themselves during their lifetime with Torah and Mitzvot. They deserve Shvach even greater than the Tzaddik, than the living Tzaddikim, because Gdolim Tzaddikim and Mitzvotim, Yosem and B'chayim. The Tzaddikim are greater. So the tzaddikim, to a certain extent, are greater after they passed away than while they were alive. I mean, we who learn Chassidus and who learn Geras Chazayim and Tanya have a little better understanding of that, because you have what the Alter Rebbe explains over there, that the life of the tzaddik is not a physical life, it's a spiritual life, and now the ruchnis, the accomplishments, the ava and yira that he had towards Hashem, now they're available to everybody. Okay, let's go on.
So there you go. It applies to tzaddikim.
I said it applies to tzaddikim. You know what I just said? You were asking how you know it applies to other tzaddikim. There you go. It applies to other tzaddikim. Let's go on. We have a lot of ground to cover. But that's the point. So in the narrowest sense, it applies to the others. In a broader sense, it applies to tzaddikim. Okay. So in other words, each one has an advantage. The living have an advantage because they're still able to learn Torah and do mitzvahs. But the dead have an advantage because their tchus are greater, because gdolim tzaddikim themselves in yosem l'chayim. So no contradiction. Dover Acher continues Rav Tanchum, another explanation. Min Hogar Shel Olam, the way it works in the world, Sar Bos of Adam Gozer Zera, a human minister, a human nobleman, or whatever, passes a law. Sufik Mekaimin Oisa, Sufik Ein Mekaimin Oisa. People might keep it, might not keep it. The Im Tim Saloima Mekaimin Oisa, and even if they do keep it, Bechayev Mekaimin Oisa, Bemoisa Ein Mekaimin Oisa, they only keep it while he's alive, not after he's dead. The Ilu Moshe Rabbeinu Gozer Kamak Zeres to kick in Kamak Hakonos, as opposed to Moshe Rabbeinu made a lot of Zeres and he issued a lot of Zeres on the Jewish people. He made a lot of Hakonos. It actually points out that you have Hakonos that go all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. For example, the idea that we learn the halachos of a Yom Tov on that Yom Tov 30 days before it is a Hakona of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe says maybe not. Maybe the Tachonis over here we just mean are the various parts of the Torah that Moshe taught us. Anyway, the Kayomisim, the Olam, the Omei Olamim, those continue to exist thousands of years after for all time, long after Moshe Rabbeinu passed away. The Lord Yofa Omer Shlomo of Shabbat Hanif Amesim. So in that sense also, isn't it valid that Shlomo said that the dead sometimes are better than the living? Namely, the dead Moshe Rabbeinu is better off than the living government ministers, where what Moshe says is where Moshe says we keep more punctiliously than people follow the laws passed by the ministers or whatever, and they continue to do it even after he passed away. You actually have in that connection, you know, worth mentioning in connection with Pesach, which is coming up in a couple of days. You have a famous story of the Levius Prediction or along those lines. where on Erev Pesach, he asked his chassidim to go and get him various kinds of contraband, various kinds of things that are illegal to have in Russia in those days, certain products, tobacco from Turkey, and then carpets from wherever. And they go out and they can find, because you always have people who are evading the law and going and smuggling them in. And then he asks them to go find some chametz among anybody, and you can't. Everybody got rid of their chametz before Pesach. So the latest says, look at this, look how great the Yidden are. That when it comes to Hashem's laws, when it comes to the Tsar's laws, you can always find people who are willing to skirt them and break them. But when it comes to Hashem's laws, we treat them very, very seriously. You have a story in the Medrash, actually, similarly, involving a Roman emperor and Rabbi Yeshua, where the emperor actually asked Rabbi Yeshua, based on this pasuk, Kila Kelev, which quoted before, Kila Kelev Chai, who told him, Ari HaMes, that the living dog is better than the dead lion, which we're going to explain soon what that pasuk is referring to. So the emperor says, in that case, I must be greater than Moshe Rabbeinu. And Rabbi Yeshua proves to him, like we're saying in the Gemara over here, that no, Moshe Rabbeinu said, for example, we're not allowed to light a fire on Shabbat, and nobody does that unless there's somebody dangerously ill, as opposed to, he shows him, in the story over there, the emperor passes the law that nobody in Rome is allowed to light a fire for the next couple of days, and sure enough, before the day is even out, they're already breaking it, because people have to cook, and people have to whatever. Okay. So that's another meaning of Shabbat HaNeis HaMeisim, that you have, that the dead Moshe Rabbeinu is greater than the live government, than the live government ministers and what have you, who pass laws. Now we still have to deal with the other part about the living dog, about the living dog and the dead lion. That we're going to get to later. But first, another meaning of what Shlomo means when he says that I praise the dead over the living is Kedid of Yehuda Amar Rav. It's related to what Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav. The Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav. My dichtiv, what does it mean, a pasuk in Tehillim, asei imi ois v'tova, we say it before Shir Shor Yoyim, on days when we say Tachnun, asei imi ois v'tova, David asked Hashem, make for me a sign for good, the yiru sonai v'yevoshu, and let my enemies see it and be embarrassed. So what kind of sign for good, and what enemies is David concerned about? It means Amma David l'kniacharesh v'alchol ribon shalom, m'chol li al oisei oven. It means David is asking Hashem, forgive me for that Avera, for the whole story of Bathsheba. Now, we're going to talk later on, and Daphnun Hayden and Bob, we're going to talk about that technically it wasn't an Avera because Bathsheba already had a get from Uriah, but nevertheless, there was a tremendous Chil Hashem involved. So David, throughout the rest of his life, is fasting and doing Shuvah, doing different things, to ask Hashem to forgive him for the Avera. So eventually Hashem tells him, okay, you're forgiven for it. So now David is asking, "Asei imi ois, make for me a sign that you forgave me b'chaya, during my life." So that's when he's asking in this pasuk, "Asei imi ois b'tova, while I'm still alive, demonstrate that you've forgiven me in order that now all my enemies who are claiming, oh, look, David was over on Eshes Ish, David killed an innocent person, etc., that they should be embarrassed and realize that they don't know what they're talking about. So Hashem answers David, "B'chayecha eini magia. I'm not going to do it while you're still alive. B'chayech shloim abincha ani magia. But I am going to show that to the people in general. I'm going to show that during the lifetime of your son David, of your son Shloim." So what happened? What happened during Shloim's time that demonstrated that Hashem had forgiven David? So like this. When Shlomo built the Beis Hamikdash, Bikish Lahafnik Orem Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim, he wanted to have the Orem brought into the Kodesh HaKadoshim where it belongs, but the gate was stuck together and would not open up, so they wouldn't allow the Orem in. Omer Shlomo Esrim Ba'abogad Nona Shlomo HaMelech then said 24 praises or 24 requests to Hashem, Renata means praise, it also means crying out or whatever, so 24 different tefillos he said to Hashem, but like that, and he still wasn't answered. Where do we get the number 24? Rashi says two explanations. One is that we learned about in Brachos. We talked about the sources for the various numbers of of brachas in davening. On a regular day, you have 18, and later on 19, among other things. On a tainis tibur, we have mishnayis and tainis add that you add six extra. Say that you add six extra brachas between Re'ena and Refa'enu, where nowadays the Chazan says Amenu. So therefore, you get up to 24. So we said over there in the Gemara, where do you get 24 from? So because Shlomo said these 24 Renonis. So one explanation, Rashi says, is that in Shlomo's Tefillah, which you can find in Melachim and in Divrei Hayamim, there's 24 times where he uses expressions that have to do with Tefillah. 24 times where he uses the word Tefillah or Rina or Tchina or other words like that that represent, that mean davening. There's a medrash that says that there are 10 words in Tanakh for davening. So that's one explanation. Rashi then says another explanation that he said the 24 brachas that you say on a tiny saber. Rashi says, what are you talking about? It's the other way around. He's saying brachas, that we learn those 24 brachas from these 24 renunas of Shlomo's. So that, and then there's one of the Achronim, Rabbi Walter Meir Horowitz, wants to say that it refers to the first 24 kapitlach of Tillim, because the psukim that we're going to quote now, that Shlomo said, are at the end of kapitel Chavdalim. Okay, anyway, he said 24 tefillahs and still nothing. Pasach ba'omah su'usharim v'sheichem. So Shlomo started saying the psukim at the end of Kapitel Chavdalid, lift up gates, lift up your heads, v'hinasu pischei olam, raise yourself up, you eternal doors, you doors that last forever, v'yavei melech hakavod, and let the king of glory come in, but meaning open up in honor of Hashem. But rohatu basri l'mivlei, the gates now are, like, so to speak, running after him to swallow him up because they think he's talking about himself. Omru mizo mihu zeh melech hakavod. So they answer with the words of the next passage. Who is this melech hakavod? What are you calling yourself a melech hakavod and saying we should open in your honor? Omru lahu. So he says, no, Hashem izu zegiber. I'm talking about Hashem who is powerful and mighty. Chaz of Amr, then he continues again. As the next passage continues, lift up your heads, O gates, lift yourselves up, lift yourselves up, you gates that last forever. The Yavi Melech HaKavod, and let the King of Glory come in. And again, they ask me, who's that Melech HaKavod? Who is this Melech HaKavod you're talking about? And he answers them, Hashem Tzvakas, who Melech HaKavod Tzela. Hashem Tzvakas is the King of Glory forever. So I'm not talking about myself, I'm talking about Hashem. Even with all of that, the Loinander, even with all of that, he still was not answered, and the gate still didn't open up. So what is he going to do? Kiven Sha'oma, then as soon as he said, which you find at the end of his tefillah, in Divrei Hayamim, the last pasuk, Hashem Elokim al Toshet Pnei Meshechecha, Hashem, don't turn away the face of your anointed one, Zochra L'chastei David Avdecha, remember the kindness and the chiddus of your servant David, Miyad Mena. Right away he was answered. The next pasuk in Divrei Hayamim says that the fire came down on the Mizbeach, and was saying here in the Gemara, the doors opened up, and they were able to put in the Aron into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So that was the Ois that Hashem showed, that only in the Schut of David did the gates open up. The one explanation for why Pascha was it shown at that time, because we know that David wanted to build the Beis Mikdash, and Hashem told him you can't, because you waged a lot of wars, and whatever, and therefore your son Shlomo will build the Beis Mikdash. But you had enemies of David who were saying, no, that's not the reason. The reason is because David did that terrible Avera involving Bathsheba, and therefore Hashem didn't want him to build the Beis Mikdash. So like this, when the gates for the Beis Mikdash opened, Davde and his chus, that demonstrated to everybody once and for all that that wasn't the reason why Hashem prevented from David from building it in the first place. At that moment, the faces of all of David's enemies, Rashi explains, include the family of Shaul, it includes Shimi and other such people. It's a little odd that Rashi mentions Shimi in this connection, because Shimi actually had been executed by it seems from the Pesukim that Shimi had been executed by Shlomo a couple of years before that for disobeying him. Maybe Rashi means the family of Shimi. Whatever it is, anyway, the point is, those are the examples of enemies of David. So all of their faces now turn black from embarrassment to shulek dera, like the bottom of a pot. The yadu kala on the Holy Israel, and now all the people and all the Jewish people knew that Hashem had forgiven David for the Avera for the Avera involving Bathsheba. So therefore, isn't it valid that Shlomo said that I praise the dead that have already died, meaning that he's talking about his own father, David HaMelech, that he's greater than I am, that his chosim were greater than mine, because the Aron was able to be brought in his chosim and not in mine. And the Gemara continues, this, in this connection, we have a pasuk that mentions, after the Chanukah Tabayis, the pasuk says, it's at the end of the Aftarah of Shmini Atzeres, by Yom HaShmini Shilach HaTa'am, the pasuk says, on the eighth day, on Shmini Atzeres, Shlomo sent off the people, meaning he gave them permission to return home. By the way, you have a Divrayam, it says a little bit differently. It says on the 23rd, which would be Yisrochag. So one of the few explanations, one of them is that some of them could already leave on Shmini Atzeres because they live within the Tchum. Some of them would have to wait until Motzei Yom Tov because it's past the Tchum, or that they took leave from him on Shmini Atzeres, and again, they took leave from him the next day. Anyway, whatever the point is, that he shilach et ha'am, he sent off the people. They blessed the king, they blessed Shlomo, and they went back to their tents, meaning to their houses, happy and with good heart. They were happy for all the good that Hashem did for his servant David and for his people Yisrael. So the Gemara is going to dash in this last part of the pasuk, phrase by phrase, and we're going to see that they're going to see there's a connection with what we just said about Hashem forgiving David. So vayochol ohalehem, when it says they went to their tents. Now we know also in many places in Shas, we use the word ohaloi to mean a person's wife. So for example, by Masorah, when it says that after the first stage of his tahara, it says v'yoshav mechutz lo'ohaloi shivas yamin, you have to stay outside his tent for 7 days. What it means is he's also with Tashmish HaMitzah, with his wife, for the next 7 days. So Vayochol Olehem means Shemotu Neshesehen B'Tahara, means that they came home and found their wives at Tahar, and they were allowed to have relations with them. Smechim, when the pasuk continues, they were happy. What specifically were they happy about? Shenenu Mizivah Shechina, because they enjoyed the glory of the Shechina when it came down to the Beit Mikdash. The Tovei Lev, when the pasuk continues, they were good of heart, means each one of their wives that year became pregnant. Each one of their wives that year became pregnant, the Yolda Zohar, and they gave birth to boys. So therefore, they were v'tovei lev, because as we learned in brachas, a person says, v'tovei amesis, when a baby boy is born, because it's good for him and it's good for his wife. Because he has an heir to succeed him, to take over his business or whatever it is. His wife has somebody to help her in her old age, which a daughter is not always able to do as much. So that's the betovei lev, that they're happy of heart that they had boys now. And then, in fact, they said the bracha atova amesiv on it. The pasuk continues, al kol atova asher osa Hashem l'David abdo l'Yisrael amay. They were happy. For all of the good that Hashem did for his servant David and for his people Yisrael. So what does that mean? The David Abdo means from Machalei Alos to Oven. They were happy that now they had a public demonstration that Hashem had forgiven that Hashem had forgiven David for that Avera, as we just said. And Uli Yisrael Amay, and what's the good that Hashem did for the Jewish people specifically is the Achal Hu Avonim to Oven Yom Kippurim, that Hashem forgave them for the Avera of eating and drinking on Yom Kippur. The Chanukah Tabayis began 7 days before Sukkot, so they had 7 days of celebration for the dedication of the Beit Mikdash. Then they had the 7 days of Sukkot, and then we're saying this is on Shmini Atzeres. They all started heading home. So therefore, that year they ate and drank on Yom Kippur because it was during the 7 days of inauguration of the Beit Mikdash, and they were concerned, as the Gemara tells us in Moed Katan, they were concerned that maybe after all that was a serious Avera, and they're going to be in trouble for it. Of course, if you eat on Yom Kippur, usually they're Chayav Karet. In this case, Hashem forgave them for that, so therefore they were happy. That was the good that Hashem did for the Jewish people, that he forgave them for that. Okay. So those are three explanations so far of the pasuk. Of the pasuk, v'shabeach ani et ha'meisim. So again, why ha'meisim? Yahavulukah from Tilin is that there's an advantage to when a person is alive, because then they're able to learn Torah and do mitzvahs and praise Hashem. There's an advantage. The v'shabeach ani et ha'meisim, we're saying there's three explanations. Number one, what it means is that the tzaddikim are. Number one, what it means is the tzaddikim well, a greater after they passed away. Number two is that Moshe's various Zachonis still continue to exist long after he passed away, unlike laws passed by government ministers. And the third one we're saying is where we see that David's chus helped to open the gates for this mikdash when nobody else's chus even Shlomo HaMelech's chus did. Okay, continues the Tanhum with his Yerusha. Now, what about Shlomo's other pasuk, which we were asking about, seems to contradict that, which says that the living dog is better than the dead lion?
Alexander,
yes.
Isn't there a contradiction to say that on the one hand, you didn't allow David HaMelech to build the Beis HaMikdash, but on the other hand, you didn't allow anybody else to... the Beis HaMikdash to be open and inaugurated.
That was exactly it. Hashem wanted to demonstrate the reason why I didn't have David build the Beis HaMikdash is because of other factors. The pasuk says a factor because David had waged many wars and killed many people, and the Beis HaMikdash should be built by somebody who didn't kill people, just like we have the Mizbeach is not to be touched with iron tools, because iron tools are used as weapons that kill people. The Medrash says a deeper reason, that if David had built the Beis Mikdash, it would never have been destroyed. And Hashem knew that the Jewish people are not always going to deserve having a Beis Mikdash, and that it's eventually going to need to be, eventually the Jewish people are going to need to be punished somehow. And if the Beis Mikdash can never be destroyed, then Chas V'Shalom, the Jewish people will need to be. So that was another reason. But Hashem wanted to demonstrate that it's not that David was not allowed to build the Beis Mikdash because of the Aveira involving Bathsheba. Therefore, Hashem made a big public demonstration over here at that. Just the opposite. The only reason the Beis Mikdash opened up was because of David's chus. And now you understand this, that David was not able to build the Beis Mikdash was because of other reasons, not because of Aveiras that he did. That's the point.
Yeah, but even with that point being clear, that it was not because of Bathsheba, Zavera, the fact is David HaMelech still didn't have the right to build the Beis HaMikdash during his time.
Nevertheless, the Beis HaMikdash is still credited to him because he wanted to build it and put as much of it as possible together, and the reason why he didn't build it is not because of any fault of his, but because Hashem decided that he's not the one to build it for the reasons that we just talked about. You actually have, by the way. I mean, I don't want to get to, you know, we need to get moving over here. But you know, it's interesting when you find in the Psukim that Shlomo, that David figures, there comes a point when his kingdom is peaceful, all the surrounding enemies have been conquered and whatever. So he figures it's time to build the Beis Mikdash. So he asks Nathan HaNavi, and Nathan HaNavi tells him, "Go ahead." But then Hashem immediately comes to Nathan that night with a nevuah saying, actually tell David, don't go ahead. And my plan is that it's not David who's going to build the Beis Mikdash, it's going to be Shlomo. Now, why did Hashem tell Nathan right away, go tell him right away tonight? One reason is because David is so eager to build the Beis Mikdash that Hashem tells Nathan what's going to happen. David is going to make a neder that he's not going to do such and such until he builds the Beis Mikdash, or he's going to start hiring workers or whatever right away. I don't want that. That's going to happen. I don't want that David is going to be depriving himself of something unnecessarily because he's not going to build the Beis Mikdash in the end, or he's going to hire workers and then he's going to have to pay them for nothing. So therefore, go tell him right away. But the point is, that David really wanted to build the Beis Mikdash and did everything possible in order to prepare for it. The fact that he couldn't do it in the end was not his fault. It's because of Hashem's plan. So therefore, Hashem wanted to demonstrate that publicly, that it's not David's fault. It's not because of Bathsheba. It's not because of any other flaw of David. It's rather because this is how Hashem had things planned. All right, let's go on. Now, what about this other topic that we said that Shlomo said, that the living dog is better than the dead lion? And we asked that seems to be a contradiction, because now we're saying that Shlomo himself is saying there's an advantage to the living over the dead. That is Kedirav Yehuda Amarav. That goes according to what Rav Yehuda said in the name, another thing that Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav. The Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, my dichtiv. Let's start with, what does it mean, a pasuk in Tehillim, in Kapitel Lamites, Hoji Eini Hashem Tzitzi, David asks Hashem, let me know my end, Umidas Yomai Nahi, and let me know the measure of my day, meaning how long am I going to live, Eid Mechodel Ani, let me know when I'm going to be gone from the world. Chodel means to be gone, when it ceases. So when am I going to cease from the world? Meaning, Omar Javad Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when Javad is asking Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam, Hodi'eini Hashem Kisi. Hashem, tell me the future of what's going to happen to me. And Hashem tells him,
And what day is going to pass away?
That's something else, actually, right. So one second. Let's first go with what Rashi is explaining over here, that Kisi, the Rashi we have in front of us, is Kisi in Hasidus, Lobo Yalai, the things that are going to happen to me in the future. You have on the side of it here a different view, so that Kisi means the number of years that I'm going to live. Okay, wait a minute. So he's going to ask him, tell me my case. So Hashem tells him, I can't. I have a Zera. We don't, Hashem doesn't inform a person in advance of everything that's going to happen to him and when they're going to pass away. One reason for that is, we're going to learn at the end of Amos Sefer, because as it says in Pirkei Avos, Shuvgen Echad Lefnei Nisasah, a person should do Tshuva one day before they die. A person never knows when they're going to die, so this way they're always going to be doing Tshuva. So I can't tell you that. Okay, so he says, Yomai Mahi. So he says, Umidas Yomai Mahi. Fine, then tell me the measure of my days. So tell me then how many years I'm going to live. Or the Girsa on the side of it here says, what day of the year am I going to die? At least, so okay, I won't know in advance what year it's going to be, but at least tell me what the date is going to be. No. Zerahim Lefanish, Ein Midian Midas Yomai Chaladam. No, I made a Zerah that I don't inform a person to the thing. He says, the age of Mechodel Oni, so he tells Hashem, okay, at least tell him what day of the week am I going to be gone from the world. And he said, and on that, Omolo the Shabbos Tomus. So that Hashem tells him, okay, I'll tell you that. I'll tell you you're going to pass away on Shabbos. By the way, we know famously that David passed away on Shavuos. So there's actually on the side of it here, it references a Tosfos in Chagiga that says that maybe that Gemara is disagreeing with our Gemara over here, because here we're saying he passed away on Shabbos, and they were saying he passed away on Shavuos, and the first day of Shavuos, which is the day that the first day of Shavuos, never comes out on Shabbos. But on the other hand, there's other possibilities on that. One of them being that Javed actually passed away on the second day of Shavuos. In fact, in Sifrei Chassidus, it's brought the Baal Shem Tov passed away on the Rebbein, brought in Sichus. The first day of Shavuos is the day that the Baal Shem Tov passed away, and the second day of Shavuos is the day that Javed passed away, and the second day of Shavuos comes out on Shabbos. In fact, this year it's scheduled to come out on Shabbos, so it could still be reconciled. Anyway, so
that's Yom Sheni Galuyos, isn't it? The second day of Shavuos.
That's fine, but even so, it can still be considered Shavuos. It can still be considered that for us sometimes it is Shavuos. And in those days also, remember, Nissan and Iyar could be of different lengths than those years, and you could have in those days when they were Makadosh Apiyaria, so you could have where Shavuos could actually be the 50th day of Sfira, could actually be the 7th of Sivan rather than the 6th. Nowadays, you also have when a person crosses the international date line, according to the Rebbe's Shitta, then he keeps Shavuos on his own date because he has to keep his own count of Sfiras Ayma. So you can have even nowadays where a person keeps the first day of Shavuos on the 7th of Sivan. But whatever. Anyway, the point is that Hashem tells him, you're going to pass away on Shabbos. Marsha, by the way, explains the dialogue a little differently. That first he's asking for the day, for the exact date he's going to pass away. Then he's asking, Midas Yomei Mahi, at least tell me what season is it going to be in, during the summer or during the winter, when the days are longer or when the days are shorter, and Hashem tells him that also not. And then he tells him, okay, the day of the week, and Hashem tells him, fine, that I'll tell you on Shabbos. Where the idea being, in other words, Marsha says, if Hashem told him the exact date, then again, he might wait with doing Tshuva until then. If Hashem told him what season of the year, okay, so for half the year he'd be doing Tshuva all the time, and the other half of the year he'd figure, I don't need to. Like this one, he told every Shabbos, that every week he's going to be doing Tshuva. Okay. So David doesn't like that idea that he's going to pass away on Shabbos. He says, almost the Echad of Shabbos, better let me pass away on Sunday. That way they can do the Levaya, they can do the Hesped without any delay. Amalai, Hashem tells him, can't. Kvarigia Malchus Shloima Bincha, the time of the kingship of your son Shloima has already arrived at that point. And we have a rule, as we learned in Brachos, the Ein Malchus Negas B'chabacha Filikim Loinima. One Malchus cannot touch or overlap the other one, even by a hair's breadth. By Sunday is already too late. Your Shloimeh is supposed to be king already. So he says, almost the Erev Shabbos. So David says, okay, then let me instead pass away on Erev Shabbos for the same reason, at least let the Levaya and the Hesped and everything be able to take place right away. Amar Lo, Hashem tells him, no. You yourself wrote in Tilim with Ruach HaKodesh, Ki Tov Yom B'Chatzerecha Me'olot, one day in your courtyard is greater than 1,000. So what does that mean? Hashem says, Tov le'yom echad sha'at yoshev ba'osef ha'torah. To me, it's more precious and greater one extra day when you're in my courtyard, meaning you're sitting and learning Torah, is better than elef olas she'asid Shlomo bincha lahakiv lefanei agav evzeach. Is better to me than even the 1,000 olas that Shlomo is eventually going to bring on the Mizeach. You find a pasuk in Melachim where one time Shlomo brought 1,000 korbanos, Uzi in his reign. But nevertheless, one extra day of your learning Torah is better than that. So I don't want you to pass away one day earlier than necessary, because then that's one day of you learning Torah, which is lost. Okay. So now that David knows that he's going to pass away on Shabbos, Kol Yoma the Shabbos to have a Yosef the Goddess Kula Yoma. So from then on, every Shabbos, he would sit and learn Torah the whole day. That way the Malachamavis can't come close to him. And the Sfasemis actually says a different verse on it, that once he knew he's going to pass away on Shabbos, so now he wants to make sure that he's using as much of his time valuably as possible, that it shouldn't be that he passes away not learning Torah. Anyway, so what happened? Now, who Yoiv de Boi Lamenach Nafshei, on the day when David was actually supposed to pass away, come Malacham Lavis Kamei, so the Malacham Lavis came in front of David, but he couldn't do anything to him. That the Lord have a perfect form in Megirsa, because David is not stopping learning Torah, so the Malach HaMavis has no power over him. Armor my Evid Lay, so the Malach HaMavis says, what am I going to do about him? After all, I have a job. So what happened? Havalei Bustana Achoda, they say, David had a garden, or an orchard of trees behind his house, behind his palace. Also, Malachamavis saw it with Vachish Ve'ilani. So Malachamavis went up and started making noise among the trees, so to moving the branches or whatever, to make like a noise. So David went out to see what's going on. Have a solid Vidarga. He was going up the steps, so up a ladder, to see what's going on. If his Darga Metuse, a rung of the ladder fell out from underneath him. Ishtik, so for a moment there he was quiet because of the surprise that he was falling. And then he passed away. Then the Malach HaMavis was able to do his job. By the way, Ben Yoyada, I think it is, wants to say, and we have a Gemara in Baba Basra that says that David HaMalach was not, that his neshama was not taken away by the Malach HaMavis. So he says that the idea is the Malach HaMavis would come, like to prepare David for it, and then he would actually die with Misas Neshika, with the Shechina appearing to him, and his neshama goes out for that. But whatever, the point is that now the Malach HaMavis was able to do his job in that moment when David was distracted. But now continues the story. Shalach Shlomo le Beis Medrash. Shlomo sent a message to the Beis Medrash with two shailos. Number one, Abba Met. Number one, my father has passed away, Umoto Bachama, and the body is lying there in the sun. And if we leave him there until after Shabbos, the body is going to decay, and we don't want that. And number two, a separate shaila, Uklovim Shalbeis Abba Re'evim, Ma Esa. Second of all, David's dogs are hungry. What should I do about it? So what should I do in both of those cases? Shohole, so they answered him first with the answer about the dogs. Kasoich nevela v'hanach l'shneach klavim. As far as the dogs, cut up a dead animal, and you can feed that to the dogs. In other words, that you're allowed to, even though dead animals usually are mukta, but you're allowed to handle it for the sake of the dogs, because it's food for them. And as far as Va'avicha, as far as your father, as who's passed away, you can't move him directly on Shabbos, because a dead body is mukta on Shabbos, but Hanach olav kikur a tinek v'taltalai. Put on him a loaf of bread or a child, and then carry them both together. Now, usually you're not allowed to do that, because most kinds of mukta things, you're not allowed to do that. You're allowed to, we'll learn later on in the Masechta, in certain cases, you're allowed to move on mukta item together with a non-mukta item, where primarily you need the non-mukta item. Let's say you have an example later on in the Masechta. Let's say you have money. Let's say you found on Shabbos, you found a pillow that accidentally you left money on it. So then you're allowed to pick up the pillow with the money on it and move it elsewhere, because you need the space, because you need the pillow itself. But here it's the other way around. Here the primary purpose is to move the mess. So for purposes of the mess, the Chachamim allowed it. Otherwise, such a thing wouldn't be allowed. But like this, you put on it something that you otherwise need to move on Shabbos, for example, a loaf of bread or a child, and then the Talpulay, and then you carry it.
It's going to be dying for the mess?
In this case, it's the only thing you can do. The Lo Yotha Omer Shlomo, isn't it valid that Shlomo said So look at that. You see, the living dog is better than the dead lion. The lion representing Governor Melech. What we see, first of all, we see that for the dogs, you don't have to do anything different. You can just cut up the nevela as is without having to make any shinui, as opposed to the mess, you have to make a shinui. And number two, Dashi says, you see that they answered the question about the dogs before even the question about David. So we see that in that sense. And that's what David means when he says that the living dog is better than the dead person. And we see that the halachas of muksa are bent more easily for the sake of feeding a live animal, because sa'a ba'al chayim, than they are for taking care of a mess.
The only thing I don't understand is that he got both answers at the same time. So once they got the answer and removing the mess, the dogs are not going to keep away, because the mess is being carried inside. The dogs have to be fed.
No. You're thinking when he says the dogs are hungry means they're about to eat the body. That's not what he means. He means b'chlal, the dogs are hungry. A separate question. In fact, there are some interesting explanations from the Mepharshim what the two questions have to do with each other. One of them is we know there's a halacha that you have to feed your animals before yourself. So now that David has passed away, nobody's feeding the animals. So therefore, so now they're hungry.
I don't think King David was feeding the animals. He's got servants. He's got a bunch of people.
Maybe, before a person eats his meal, he has to have them fed. But since David is not now going to be eating a meal, then therefore they're not going to be fed. The Ion Yaakov says another verse on it. That we know that when the Malach HaMavis comes to town, there's a word in Bava Kamma that says the dogs start barking. So like this, he thought. So like this, the dogs are barking. The dogs are crying or whatever. See, he was concerned. It's not just because the Malach HaMavis came. It's also because they're hungry. Okay, there's different other explanations also what the exact connections were between them. Ben Yoyada says it doesn't just mean the simple thing about dogs. It also means it's a muscle that Shlomo is asking about these various enemies of David that we just mentioned before that are barking and claiming that David died as a result of his avedus. What should I do about them? Et cetera. But anyway, in the simple sense, yes, he's partially asking, the dogs are hungry, what do we do? And actually, one explanation is also that it's not about asking what the halacha is, what you do. Shlomo is smart enough to know a halacha that says in Shulchan Aruch that you're allowed to feed animals on Shabbos and you're allowed to feed them in a vela. The two questions that he's asking are, it's almost like an expression of surprise. How comes it that with dogs you're allowed to feed them directly? Rather, he's asking, given that you're allowed to feed dogs directly, and we see that mukta is bent for their sake, does that also apply to the mess? And they tell him that, no, you have to, the only exception is you can use a kicker or a jinnah. So the question is not, Posh doesn't know what to do with the dogs, according to that. He's comparing and contrasting them. Given that you're allowed to for the dogs, are we also allowed to for dust? Anyway, but we see that the halachos and mukta are bent more for the dogs, and we see they answered him first. So in that sense, the living dog is better. Okay. And Rav Tamchin finishes off. Now, all this time, remember, this all started with the question, are you allowed to put out a lamp on Shabbos for the sake of a sick person? So he says, as far as the question that you asked me, the she'ilna kodameichan literally means that I asked before you. That's derech hanover. He's saying it like in a humble way. Really, really, he means, of course, that you asked me. So the answer is as follows. Ner kriya ner. A lamp is called a ner. And that's the word for it. The nishmasa shel adam kriya ner. A person's neshama is also called a lamp. Ner Hashem nishmas adam. Therefore, mutav tichba ner shel bas of adam. If ne ner shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, better we put out the lamp that was lit by a bas of adam in order to save the lamp that was lit by Hashem. Rashi says this isn't the actual source in halacha for the concept that we go to Shabbat for pikuach nefesh. We have actually a whole sugya in Yuma. Rav Nissim Goin brings it, and the previous Amud brings a long thing about it. So you have a whole sugya over there discussing various sources in Pesukim for the idea that Pekuach Nefesh is Dei for Shabbos. But over here, Reb Tanachum, again, speaking in front of women and Amir Oris and whatever who came to hear the Drasha, so therefore he uses a simple idea in order to stress this idea to them that you do break Shabbos in order to save a sick person's life. Okay. So now that we mentioned Kehelis, now we're going to talk more about this business of Pesukim that seem to contradict each other. Amr of Yehuda Breder Shmuel Bashilas. Mishmei Dirav. Bikshu Chachamim Lignoi Sefer Kehelis. The Chachamim, at some point in history, wanted to hide Sefer Kehelis and make it that it shouldn't be a Sefer that's accessible to the public anymore. because there are things in Sefer Kehelos that seem to contradict each other, and that seem to be, it may even make it that people may learn, may think from it to not believe in the Torah at all altogether, chas v'shalom, or mitnei ma loy gamzu, so why did the Chachamim not hide it away, and they kept it in public circulation, mitnei shetchilosa divrei Torah, the Sefer divrei Torah, because the beginning and the end of it include divrei Torah, and therefore the Chachamim realized, once you see that the beginning of it is talking about the importance of Torah, and the end of it is talking about the importance of Torah, then you're going to realize the whole Sefer Kehelos is something that is compatible with Torah, and you'll realize, therefore, that the contradictions, you'll work out and see what the contradictions are, that you're not going to learn anti-Torah things from there. Where do we see Chilos Divrei Torah? Where do we see the beginning of Sefer Kehelos has Divrei Torah? Because you have a pasuk, it's the third pasuk in the paper. My yisrin la'odim b'chol amole sheyamol tachas haShemesh. What advantage does a person have with all of his work that he works under the sun? So what does that mean? V'amri dvei Rav Yanai. So they said in the yeshiva of Rav Yanai, tachas haShemesh u'be'emoy. The meaning of that pasuk is that a person doesn't gain anything permanent from the work that they do in this world. In this world that's under the sun, meaning the Gashmistic world, Kodem Shemesh Yeshloi. But what he works on with things that precede the sun, which means the Torah, which was created, Pine Shana, Kodma Torah La'olam, so the Torah was created before the world and before the sun, that there is benefit in. Also refers to a person learns Torah and does mitzvahs, and they get Gan Eden for it, and Gan Eden was also created before the sun. In Tanya, in a couple of places, the Alter Rebbe talks about something from the Zohar, that even within learning Torah and doing mitzvahs themselves, there's a difference whether a person does them with Kavana or not. If a person does them without Kavana, then they also remain Tachas HaShemesh. They also remain in this Gashmistic world under the sun, and therefore there's not much benefit in them. But when a person does, learns the same thing in Torah, with Kavana, again, then okay, it raises it up. But when a person does it to begin with Ava and Yira, then it goes higher than the sun, and then it's supposed to say, and there's profit and there's benefit in it. So that's the beginning of Kehelos includes Divrei Torah. Sefer Divrei Torah, where do we see at the end of Kehelos, you have Divrei Torah, just there, because the last pasuk of Kehelos, we say it before benching. First Dover Akol Nishma, at the end of the matter, when everything is heard, Ephel Kim Yirah, fear Hashem, that's mitzvot of Shmur, and keep his mitzvot, Kizek, Kol Adam, because this is the entire person. So therefore, we see the beginning and end of it are stressing the importance of learning Torah and doing mitzvot, so therefore now we understand that the rest of, so Rashi says that if the beginning and end are Divrei Torah, then you can be sure the middle of it also, Kol Shekein, has Divrei Torah in it as well, and therefore we're not worried about the contradictions. The contradictions you'll be able to reconcile. So the Gemara asked, my Kizek Kol Adam, we had this Gemara in Brachas as well, what does this expression mean, Kizek Kol Adam? So the simple meaning, it means that this is the whole purpose of a person in the world is to fear Hashem and to do the mitzvah. But if that was the only meaning of it, then the expression wouldn't be Kizek Kol Adam. Kizek Kol Adam sounds like it means this is the whole man. So what does that mean? If you want to say that this is the purpose of a person, it would have been phrased differently. Kizek Kol Adam implies this person who does this is the entire man. So what does that mean? We learned this at the beginning of Brachas, so a couple of months ago. It means, Rav Elazar says, the whole world was only created for the sake of such a person. Rav Abba Bakahana says differently, such a person is equal in weight, in equal in importance to the entire world. Shimon ben Azay says a third meaning, the whole world was only created to be a companion, to be a society for this person to live in. So what does that mean? When we learned about it in Brachas, we talked about something that it says in Akosev, on Ein Yaakov over there, that what it means is like this. Hashem created the world primarily for people to be able to learn Torah and do mitzvahs. So Rabbi Lazar is taking the view, therefore, that when a person does that, that's it. There's no other purpose. There's nobody else in the world that Hashem needed to create the world for. He is the entire world was created only for him. On the other hand, Rabbi Abba Kahana says, and that's going a little too far, you can't say that what he's saying, the whole rest of the world has no purpose. No, he's important, and the whole rest of the world is equal in importance to him. And Shimon Renaze, or Shimon Lema, takes a middle ground. No, they're not quite as important as him, but on the other hand, you can't say they have no business existing at all. They have a purpose in existing, but their purpose in existing is because a person can't live alone, a person needs to live in a society, a person needs to have other people doing things in the world, and therefore they have a purpose in life in order to help him, in order to support him in what he's doing. The Maharal explains it a little bit differently. The first one is saying again that once he fears Hashem and does mitzvahs, then he includes with him the whole purpose of the world. So the whole purpose was for him. Shakol zekinagid olam kule means that he lives in a different kind of world. Like you have the whole rest of the world lives on one level, and he lives on a whole different level. So therefore, he's like equal to all of them. It's as if there are two different worlds, his world and their world. And the third one is when it says that the whole world is meant as companionship for him, means that other people learn from him, other people learn to act like him and to become his companions and come close to him. Okay. Anyway. Oh, my divar of questions there. Where do we see in Kehelet things that seem to contradict each other? So let's just, for one thing, you have a positive in Kehelet. One pasuk says anger is better than laughter. You have another pasuk that says about laughter, I said it's praiseworthy. And so what is it? Is anger better or is happiness better? But we have the portion on the pasuk actually say that mahulal actually can be related to a word that means silly. So in that case, there's no contradiction. But the Gemara is assuming that mahulal is malashon halal, means praiseworthy. And another example of a contradiction: k'siv v'shibachti ani es ha-simcha. A pasuk in Kehelet says, "I praise simcha. It's a good thing." Uchtiv. But you have another pasuk in Kehelet, "Ulo simcha mazu oisa." What is simcha? What is simcha accomplishing? So what is it? So is simcha better or is anger better? What's going on over here? So
that's Rabbi, schoik is not the only, it sounds like not only laugh. Schoik means like
happiness.
Like, oh, that's okay. So schoik is a bad term of happiness. Wild.
No, not necessarily.
Wildkite.
No. Heulobus is wildkite. Schoik is, means laughter, means happiness.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Anyway, so what is it? Is it good or is it bad? So this is the kind of thing that originally the Chachamim were concerned about. People are going to read Kehelet and they're going to come to wrong conclusions. So what does it mean? Once we understand that Kehelet begins and ends with Divrei Torah, Loi Kasha, then we know there's no contradiction. Toiv Kas Mitzchoik, when it says anger is better than laughter or happiness, means Toiv Kas Shekoris HaKadosh Baruch Hu Al HaTzadikim Ba'olam HaZeh, means the anger that Hashem shows against the Tzadikim in this world is better, Mitzchoik Shebesach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Al HaShoyim Ba'olam HaZeh, is better than the laughter and the happiness that Hashem shows and the Roshoyim in this world, because the Tzadikim suffer in this world and they get a greater Olam Haba for it. And the Roshoyim, on the other hand, have Shav Tzacheket. They have the time is happy for them. They have it good in Olam Haba, and then they lose their place in Olam Haba. So the anger, so a person who's shown anger from Shemayim in this world is better off sometimes than somebody who's in a Rosha who's being shown happiness. So that's what that part means. As far as L'Schoik Amarki Maholol, when we say in the other part that we say to happiness, I said it's praiseworthy. That means that refers to the happiness and the pleasure that Hashem shows tzaddikim in olam haba. That is praiseworthy because that's what they live their life for. Then the shibachti ani es ha-simcha, when Shlomo says I praise simcha, means simcha shal mitzvah. That means the simcha that a person has when they're doing a mitzvah. For example, Rashi says at a wedding. Well, the simcha, mazu oisa, is the simcha shena from mitzvah. That was when it says, what is simcha accomplishing? That refers to a simcha that's not associated with a mitzvah. Well, lamdecha, so this comes to teach you, she'ein shechina shoda, the shechina doesn't rest on a person, loy mitech atvus, not from a state of depression, loy mitech atvus, or laziness, loy mitech schoik, or inappropriate happiness, where a person is just joking around where there's no das in it, that doesn't cause the shechina to rest on a person. Valentech kalos rosh, or lightheadedness, where a person is like acting casually and joking around. or from just a conversation, or from dvarim betalim, where a person is just talking empty talk, but rather the shechina rests on a person from a when he was occupied with a simcha of a mitzvah. We learned this in brachas as well. We said that therefore, before a person is davening, we said on the one hand, that a person has to approach davening with a sense of seriousness, but we also said there's a certain degree of simcha that a person has to approach davening with, because then the shechina rests on him. So therefore, so we see that over here, where we see that there's a kind of simcha that's good, namely, as we're saying over here, a simcha that has to do with a mitzvah, or that's preparing for a mitzvah. Tenemas, as we find in the Pasuk, by Elisha. We have a story over there where Elisha was upset at the king of Yisrael, who was worshipping Avodah Zarah, and now came to ask for help. But Elisha says, "Ba'ata chuli menagin, now bring for me a singer." V'hoyer kenagin, I'm an instrument player. V'hoyer kenagin, I'm a nagin. And as this person was playing the instrument, was playing a song on the instrument, v'atiyol of Yad Hashem, then the hand of Hashem came on Elisha, and he was able to say Nevuah. So we see that when he was put in a good mood by the music, then the Shechina was able to rest on him. Almer of Yehuda, v'chein l'dvar halacha. Rav Yehuda says the same thing is true as far as when you're going to learn halacha. As we're going to say soon in the Gemara, you have to start off with milsa d'bdichasa. You have to start off with a joke to open up the Talmidim's mind. Amar Rava v'chein l'chaloyim tov, and Rava says the same thing is also true as far as to have a good dream. You also need to, if you want to have good dreams at night, you need to go to bed in a good mood. So the question is, what do you mean that a person is supposed to learn Torah, is supposed to learn halacha with simcha? Eini, the Gemara says, is that so? V'amar Rav Gidol Amar Rav, didn't Rav Gidol say in the name of Rav, kol tamad chacham sheyoshev lifnei rabbi, any Talmud Chacham was sitting in front of his Rebbe, the ancient soysev notfos mar, and his lips are not dripping bitterness, meaning that he has a sense of ema, he has a sense of fear in front of his Rebbe, such a person, kikavena, his lips deserve to be burnt. Shenema, sif soysev sheshanim notfos moreover, as the Pasuk says, in Shirashirim, his lips are like roses. They're dripping with myrrh, which is a spice which has a very bitter taste, which is passing. So I'll take the moreover elamar over, not myrrh which is dripping, but mar bitterness which is dripping and passing out of the lips. And I'll take the sheshanim el sheshonim, and not sheshanim roses, but sheshonim, those who learn Torah. So in other words, once we understand the pasuk in that way, it means that the lips of the people who are learning Torah have to be notvos mar over, they have to be dripping and overflowing with bitterness. So a person has to have a sense of bitterness, a sense of bittul when they're learning Torah, not a sense of happiness. The answer is, loikasha habarabba habitalmid. One talking about the Rebbe has to be in a happy mood. The Talmud has to have bittul. The Talmud has to be in a sense of merius. The boys ema hava habarabba. Another possibility, both of them are talking about the Rebbe. Loikasha habitalmid delifta halabasa delhatach. One, they're both talking about the Rebbe, but one's talking about before he begins the shir, and one's talking about afterwards. So beforehand he should be happy, and afterwards he should have bittul. Tihod the Rabba, as we find the example of Rabba, mikamei the pasuk lohu the rabbanon omer milsa de bichusa. Before he would begin the shiur for the chachamim, he would say a joke, something to make the talmidim laugh. Ubadchi rabbanon, and the chachamim would laugh, the talmidim would laugh. L'soif yosted the ensa. Afterwards, he would sit with ema, with fear of Hashem, or pasuk b'shmaita, and then he would begin teaching. We have it brought in Chassidus, the idea that you begin in the wedding mimer, in the mimer l'chadodi, where you have the idea that you have to have a kiruv hadas, you have to have where the Rebbe lowers himself a level to the Talmud level in order to be able to open up the Talmud's mind, and then the Talmud is able to absorb and be mekabel from the Rebbe, and that's accomplished by this. It's interesting, over here in the Gemara, and in most places, the Gemara says that Rabba did this. In Tanya, when the Alfred Rebbe brings us in Perek Zayin of Tanya, and instead of Rabba, he says Rava. So why is that? So why does the Alfred Rebbe prefer the Gerus to Rava? So the Rebbe once shelved the Chametz in a sticha and said that the reason is because you find in another Gemara, that you find in a Gemara in Baba Basra, that the style of learning in Rava's yeshiva was a style with much more simcha than you found in other places. So therefore, maybe then he doesn't need to begin with this joke ahead of time. But no, even in Rava's yeshiva, even though the whole place was in a tznua of simcha, Rava still found it important to begin with a joke like that. Okay, we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem.
It's interesting how it plays.